Israeli forces fatally shoot a Palestinian man in the West Bank as anger mounts over the regime's controversial open fire rules. Nigeria destroys more than a million doses of expired COVID-19 vaccines, blaming vaccine nationalism for accepting jabs with short shelf lives. Also coming up, France reports over 84,000 new COVID-19 infections, coming close to all-time high the country had recorded in November 2020. Welcome to World News, live from Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, Israeli forces open fire on a car, killing one Palestinian in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. 26-year-old Mohammed Isa Abbas succumbed to wounds he sustained after he was shot in the back. He was taken to a nearby hospital in a critical condition, but attempts to save him failed. The incident comes as the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas slams new Israeli rules that give the regime soldiers more freedom to use deadly force against Palestinians. It says the new Israeli rules show Israeli military leaders criminal behaviors that are based on terrorism and the deliberate killing of innocent people. The new rule allows Israeli soldiers to shoot at Palestinians who throw stones, even if they do not pose an imminent threat. Palestinian journalist Dawood Kutar believes that the new Israeli open fire rules in the West Bank are in violation of international law.
Well, there's two issues here. First of all, on the political level, Israel's prime minister has told Mr. Biden and has acted on that, that he has no plans of negotiating a settlement of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. He's not interested in a two-state solution, and he's not even willing to meet with the Palestinian leadership. So there is no political horizon for Palestinians. There is no future that Palestinians will be free from occupation. And the very basic issue of legitimate resistance, popular resistance, it's legitimized and allowed in international conventions, is now a death threat. I mean, they are actually green-lighting and legitimizing the assassination of Palestinians simply for throwing stones. And it's a war crime, because war crimes, in terms of a conflict, you have to use proportional use of weapons. You cannot shoot at somebody throwing stones at you. That is not proportional at all.
Reports coming out of Iraq suggest an attack on a U.S. logistics convoy in the south of that country. Iraqi media say multiple roadside bombs targeted the convoy in Muthenna governance. Still no reports of casualties or possible damage. American troops, as well as their military and logistics convoys, have repeatedly come under attack over the past year. The attacks escalated after the U.S. assassinated top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes in January 2020. Their killings gave a rise to calls for the expulsion of American troops from Iraqi soil. Earlier this month, the U.S. ended its combat mission there and limited it to an advisory one. American Army veteran Seth Manzel says Washington's failures in Iraq are fanning the flame of anti-U.S. sentiments there.
You know, it's not entirely clear which groups are responsible for this, but the continued presence of the U.S. forces are definitely inflaming things there. And since did such a terrible job of eliminating ISIS, we're suffering the consequences of that, and also, moreover, the Iraqi people are suffering the consequences of that.
Saudi warplanes have reportedly carried out fresh airstrikes in Yemen's capital as the kingdom intensifies a devastating war on its neighbor. The report said the kingdom's operation in Sana'a came after the Yemeni army's drone attack on Jizan. On Monday, Saudi warplanes carried out three airstrikes on Sana'a International Airport. Yemeni officials said the air raids disrupted services at the airport, leading to a halt to the delivery of UN humanitarian aid supplies. Riyadh, along with some of its regional allies, launched a devastating war on Yemen in 2015 to reinstate a friendly regime there. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, have been killed in the onslaught. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution offers his condolences for the passing away of the Iranian envoy to Yemen. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says Hassan Irloo was a persevering and efficient ambassador. The leader said Irloo's proud portfolio boasts a collection of political and diplomatic efforts as well as social movements. Hassan Irloo passed away due to complications from COVID-19 in Tehran on Tuesday. Irloo is remembered for his endeavors to facilitate the supply of humanitarian aid to Yemen that's hit by the devastating Saudi war.
Hassan Irloo was born in 1959 in Shahrareh, a small town near Tehran. After the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran, he joined the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. He was a veteran of the Iran-Iraq War and had been suffering from complications of chemical attacks. Irloo went on to become a senior diplomat. After Yemen's conflict broke out in 2015, he was transferred to Department for Yemen's Affairs at Iran's Foreign Ministry, where he served as deputy assistant to the minister. During that period, Irloo coordinated the transfer of Iranian humanitarian aid to Yemen, in cooperation with the United Nations. In October 2020, he was appointed as Iran's ambassador to Yemen's National Salvation Government. In that portfolio, Irloo focused his efforts on unifying resistance groups and strived for national reconciliation. He encouraged Yemeni political groups to resolve their internal disputes through dialogue. The senior diplomat also worked towards garnering international support for mechanisms that would end the Yemen conflict and lift the blockade imposed by the Saudi military coalition. Irloo was diagnosed with COVID-19 days before he was transferred to Tehran from Sana'a to receive medical treatment. But by the time he arrived at a hospital in Iran's capital on Sunday, his condition had worsened irrevocably. Foreign Ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh says that's because certain countries delayed his flight out of Sana'a. Khatibzadeh did not name any specific country, but Saudi Arabia and its allies in the war have been keeping Yemen under a blockade since 2015. The main airport in Sana'a has been closed for more than 5 years now. Hassan Irloo passed away on Tuesday morning due to complications from COVID-19. Yemen's Ansarullah movement has expressed its condolences to Tehran.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps holds the third day of large-scale military drills in the south of the country. IRGC's ground forces successfully performed offensive and defensive operations using new military weapons, equipment, and modern techniques. The forces hit identified targets with heavy and semi-heavy weapons after receiving intelligence on a hypothetical enemy. An advanced homegrown tank capable of withstanding heat waves was used for the first time. The 5-day maneuvers are codenamed the Great Prophet 17. They are carried out in the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz regions, as well as the coasts of Hormuzgan, Bushehr, and Khuzestan provinces. The drills involve a variety of IRGC units. Iran regularly holds military drills to enhance the combat readiness of its armed forces. Earlier, we were joined by journalist and political commentator Mustafa Khoshcheshm. He explains why the ongoing military drills in Iran are significant and what message they send.
Well, you know that the Great Prophet series of drills, are routine exercises that happen annually. But now, in this time, it's sending direct messages to the Americans, to the Israelis, and to those Western powers in the Vienna talks that have been trying to blackmail Iran through military threats by the Israeli regime, and the Bathtub Gutkopf game that they started right from the beginning, or even before the beginning of the Vienna talks. You know, in some kind of demarcation dispute, the Israelis and Americans, they've been, you know, picking up the roles of the Gutkopf and Bathtub in the Vienna talks, trying to give credibility to military threats against Iran that was lost actually after the Iranian missile strike on Ain al-Assad in down of Global Hague, and many other you know, scenes in the Persian Gulf. And as they started the talks, they tried to appoint or assign the Israelis to this backup role, but the Israeli regime has failed already in playing a convincing role, since went to the extremes. It radicalized the tone of the threats in quantity and quality.
Nigeria destroys more than a million doses of expired AstraZeneca vaccines in a bid to allay public concerns. COVID vaccines were donated by rich Western nations several months ago. A medical expert in the Ministry of Health said Nigeria knew the vaccines had a short shelf life, but it had to take the doses due to a shortage of supplies on the continent. Faisal Shoaib stressed that the vaccines were not available because of, quote, vaccine nationalism. He accused rich countries of hoarding the jabs and donating them at the point they were about to expire. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization chief has warned that the rush in wealthy countries to roll out additional COVID doses is deepening inequity and prolonging the pandemic.
Blanket booster programs are likely to prolong the pandemic rather than ending it by diverting supply to countries that already have high levels of vaccination coverage, giving the virus more opportunity to spread and mutate.
Tedros warned that no country can boost its way out of the pandemic. He also stressed that the vast majority of hospitalizations and deaths are among unvaccinated, not unboosted people. The WHO chief said the Omicron variant is spreading at an unprecedented speed and has already been detected in 106 countries. However, Tedros said the existing vaccines continue to provide significant protection against severe illness caused by Omicron. Political commentator Abiyomi Ezekwe says many people in developed countries are hesitant to get vaccinated, while there are not enough jabs in developing countries.
Even here in the United States, there are huge pockets of vaccine hesitancy. People who will not take the vaccine, who fear the vaccine more than they do the COVID-19 virus and its various variants. This is a major problem as well. So you can imagine in developing states, you have the hesitancy, but at the same time, you have these infrastructural problems, the lack of consistent power supply, transportation issues, instability, for example, in Nigeria, in the northeast and the northwest, and even certain sections of the central part of the country, which makes it a security issue in regard to distributing the vaccine. So it's a monumental problem, and it needs to be rethought by these major producers of the vaccines in the West, and also the international humanitarian agencies such as the World Health Organization.
Meanwhile, Europe once again becomes a COVID hotspot as daily infections reach record highs in different countries on the continent. The fast-spreading Omicron variant is being blamed for the surge. New daily cases now surpass 106,000 in Britain, the highest daily tally in the country since the pandemic began. Elsewhere in Western Europe, France says it's on a war path against Omicron. The country reports over 84,000 new cases, its second highest tally this year. The French government predicts that daily cases will hit 100,000 there by the end of the year. Neighboring Italy is also witnessing a rise in its 24-hour infection. The COVID surge has already prompted some European countries to tighten restrictions just ahead of the New Year's holidays. Germany is one of them. The country says it will limit private gatherings to 10. A speech by the Turkish president following a cabinet meeting helped the lira gain 20% against the US dollar. The president vowed to control currency and implement a plan to stop the lira from losing its value. Rashan Sagram reports from Istanbul.
Turkish lira gained 20% on Monday following a speech by President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. The recovery followed a series of decisions announced by the president in a presser after the cabinet meeting. He said the new measures will encourage Turks to keep their savings in local currency instead of exchanging it to US dollar and euro.
We are presenting a new financial alternative to citizens who want to alleviate their concerns stemming from the rise in exchange rates when they evaluate their savings. Investors will be encouraged to move towards Turkish lira-based assets by issuance of government bills that are indexed to public economic enterprise revenues that are transferred to the budget.
Erdogan also said the Turkish government will help exporters who find it difficult to present the prices in foreign exchange rates due to fluctuation. He said that the government goes ahead with its lower interest rates plan as promised. The Turkish lira was at 18.4 against the US dollar before the president's speech and stood at 11.3 after it. The lira gaining value rapidly forced people to exchange the US dollar they had into Turkish lira in fear that the rate will go further down. However, the lira lost some of this value Tuesday morning and stood at 13.4 against the US dollar. No one here expected Erdogan's speech to have such an impact. Despite the wild swings, the lira is still down more than 40% against the dollar year to date. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Adam Kinzinger, one of two Republicans on the House committee investigating the deadly 6th of January Capitol attack incited by former President Donald Trump, said on Sunday, 19th of December, he was not yet ready to declare the former president guilty of a crime, but that the panel was investigating the likelihood that he is. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Richard Luscombe. The piece is titled, Capital Attack Panel Will Determine If Trump Committed Crime. Republican. Adam Kinzinger, one of two Republicans on the House committee investigating the deadly 6th of January Capitol attack incited by former President Donald Trump, said on Sunday, 19th of December, that he was not yet ready to declare the former president guilty of a crime, but that the panel was investigating the likelihood that he is. Nobody is above the law, the Illinois congressman told CNN's State of the Union program. And if the president knowingly allowed what happened on 6th of January to happen, and in fact was giddy about it, and that violates a criminal statute, he needs to be held accountable for that. The committee has been picking up pace in recent weeks with dozens of subpoenas issued, some to close Trump aides. The waters lapped at the doors of Trump's Oval Office this week when his fourth and final chief of staff, Mark Meadows, became a focus of the investigation over tweets that he received on and around the day of the insurrection, 6th of January. The committee voted unanimously to refer Mark Meadows for criminal prosecution for contempt of Congress after he withdrew his cooperation. Adam Kinzinger, who alongside fellow Republican Liz Cheney has drawn the ire of Donald Trump allies for serving on the committee, said he had no qualms about scrutinizing how Trump incited supporters to try to overturn his election defeat by Joe Biden, which he says was the result of massive electoral fraud, which it was not. He is not a king, Kinzinger said. Former presidents, they aren't former kings. Kinzinger added that he feared the events of 6th of January were a trial run for Donald Trump and his allies to attempt another coup. We will get every bit of detail that we can possibly get on that, so that's important for the president's role, he said. I want to hold the people guilty accountable, but I want to make sure that this never happens again. Otherwise, 6th of January will have been, yes, a failed trial run, but sometimes a failed trial run is the best practice to get one that succeeds, a coup that would actually succeed in toppling our government. Kinzinger's comments are the strongest to date about the depth of the inquiry into Donald Trump's role. Stop the Steal rally near the White House on 6th of January, the former President Donald Trump urged his supporters to march on the Capitol and fight like hell, or you're not going to have a country anymore. He was impeached a second time for inciting the insurrection that followed. But though Kinzinger and 9 other House Republicans and 7 GOP senators voted with Democrats, Donald Trump was acquitted in his Senate trial and remains free to run for office again. Pressed on whether he thought Donald Trump was guilty of a crime, Adam Kinzinger said, I don't want to go there yet to say, do I believe he has? But I can tell you I have a lot of questions about what the president was up to. Earlier this month, at a sentencing hearing for one of the rioters, a district court judge, Amy Berman Jackson, said she believed Donald Trump stoked the riot and should be held accountable. Judge Jackson was one of a growing number of federal judges to speak out. Donald Trump is also in legal jeopardy from investigations into his business affairs, with authorities in New York looking at tax issues in particular. Trump spoke to Fox News Sunday Morning Futures, but was not asked about the 6th of January inquiry, instead riffing on subjects including the Taliban's hatred of dogs and how Joe Biden's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, struggles to pitch a baseball. Former President Donald Trump also weighed in on a conspiracy theory popular on Fox News Channel, which says Joe Biden is not running the country based on an apparent gaffe in which he called his Vice President Kamala Harris president in a university commencement speech this week. On CNN, Adam Kinzinger acknowledged the 6th of January committee was working to complete its work before next year's midterm elections, in which Republicans are likely to take back control and thereby kill the investigation. The Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan, a Trump loyalist whose text messages were included in those released this week, was one of the Republicans rejected by the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi for a place on the 6th of January panel. Regardless, Congressman Jim Jordan has been tipped as a possible Judiciary Committee chair, who would therefore act to close the investigation of the Capitol attack. Adam Kinzinger, the Republican congressman, said, Jim Jordan could not credibly head the Judiciary Committee, but he certainly could head the committee.
thought.
Hello, dear friends, especially our Christian listeners, for the benefit of whom we present a wonderful passage found in Islamic text that evokes the prophecy of Jesus in the Gospel of St. John regarding the Paraclete, or the last and greatest of God's messengers, whom Ayah 6 of Surah Saf of the Holy Quran specifically says is Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Thus I charge you, O son of Mary, that you bring news to the children of Israel of the Master of Messengers and my most endeared, who is Ahmad, having a red camel and a face like the moon, who is a shining light, a pure heart, courageous, venerably modest. Verily, he is a mercy to the worlds and master of the children of Adam on the day of his meeting me, the most honored of the foremost and the last of the messengers from me.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, types of people. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the types of people in the Islamic lifestyle, and these types of people that we are talking, it is in relation to the wealth, inshallah. We have seen in the narrations, and when we look at the verses of the Quran as well, and even the narration that we have from the Prophet, one of the narrations, in that the Prophet has said that the people are of three types. The first type of people is those who do not store money, who do not store wealth and properties, and what they do is they just earn to the amount which they need, and if they have extra, they spend it for the people and they give charity and alms. In the Quran we have the wordings that yunfiquna amwalhum fi sabilillah, they spend their money in the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And for them, in the Quran Allah has given the example that their example is that when they spend something, it is just like, you know, making something 70 times, you know, multiplying something to the 70 times. So the money which they spend in this world, the money which they spend in this world is being given them 70 times more in hereafter. Thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the types of people in accordance to the collecting or storing the wealth. So we said that the first type of people are those who spend money and who do not like to store money. The second type of people are those who like to store money, but obviously they spend it on their relatives. These people who do not obviously collect or store money unjustly, but it is according to the justice, but on the other hand, they love to spend for their relatives, for the brothers and sisters, for the poor people. So basically, the second category of people are those who store the money for their children, because if they go, they want to have something for their children as well. So basically, in this type of people, people should be aware of what they are storing, because it should not go towards the wastage, which is known as israf, because israf or wastage is one of the big sins. So therefore, those who likes to store money, they should look at the aspect of justice as well, that it should be in accordance to the justice, and they should spend it for the others as well. And the third category of people are those who has made this wealth and property their actual goal, and they're living a material life. And in the Quran, Allah has said that these are the worst people on the earth. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Exchanging gifts is an inseparable and also the most joyful part of Christmas traditions. How about sharing the joy with animals? Now, a zoo in the Colombian city of Cali is doing so by giving presents to its animals. The presents are actually the animals' favorite foods served in a different way. Animals spend time unpacking the gifts decorated in Christmas theme, and then access the food they like the most. Feeding in this way arouses the animals' curiosity and fills them with excitement. Zookeepers say they want to show that animals always receive care at their zoo.
It is a very cool way to generate empathy for visitors. Although animals do not know that it's Christmas or that it's a special date, it is important to generate that message in visitors that we make care of our animals, and that for us it is important to share with them this Christmas season.
The zookeepers say they make use of enrichment strategies for their initiative. They actually stimulate the behaviors of a range of animals, even the species they keep in an aquarium. Running a marathon is pretty tough for most, but a group of people has upped the ante to take the competition to sub-zero temperatures of Antarctica. 62 people descended on the Union Glacier from around the world and ran over a 42-kilometer course. The area is just a few hundred kilometers from the South Pole. Soft snow and temperatures as low as minus 15 degrees Celsius did not stop Latvia Evija Raine from setting a women's record. The event was delayed for several days because of a massive storm that battered the area a week ago. Adventurers and athletes have been putting their strength to the test in the race every year since 2005. A tiny baby mouse deer takes its first steps into the world with a round body and spindly legs in a Polish zoo. It was born on December 2nd and now stands roughly 10 centimeters tall. The Warsaw Zoo got its first mouse deer last year and a second one last summer. Zoo staff are surprised that the pair of new arrivals have produced offspring so quickly. Mouse deer are among the smallest mammals. Even as adults, they only weigh around 2 kilograms. Contrary to their name, they are neither from mouse nor from deer species. Some mammalogists consider them living fossils because they haven't evolved much over millennia. Beachgoers in Brazil's Rio de Janeiro have been surprised by very rare visitors, a family of orcas. The family of three was seen swimming in shallow waters of a crowded beach south of the city. The group didn't seem to care at all about the presence of people on their paddleboards. Footage of the orcas quickly spread on social media because they don't usually come that close to the coast. A local biologist says the whales were likely to drawn. They were likely drawn to the area by a cold current from further south.
What we see in the video is a family group that has a male and a female who have a calf. It is common that the orcas come from a colder current where there is also a shoal, and they reach the south, the north in fact, and end up hitting our coast. Then they rest in warmer waters such as Copacabana Beach, Ipanema Beach, and Barra da Tijuca.
The biologist says the mammals pose no risk to humans despite the label killer whales. He says there is no record of their attacks on humans. Researchers suspect that the migration patterns of whales could be influenced by climate change and the resulting changes in water temperatures. Serving customers in a high-tech way. That's what a traditional restaurant in the German state of Bavaria does. What's the goal? The owner explains.
We decided ourselves for this robot because of the lack of staff. We looked for support in a technological form. It's not a replacement, of course, but it's a relief for the waiters.
The robot is equipped with a trolley and it can easily move around in the restaurant. When it comes to saving time, the high-tech waiters is of great help, especially when the restaurant is packed with customers. The owner says most customers first become surprised when they come across the robot. He says waiters are still present to serve meals and receive orders. Butterfly gardens are a place where you can watch these tiny creatures and marvel at their beauty. But have you ever wondered where these butterflies come from? These colorful creatures are in fact bred in butterfly farms. And Donald Orsay from Costa Rica is one of the biggest breeders, making that the mission of his life. He produces somewhere around 2,500 pupas per week. Arce is one of the world's largest exporters of the popular Morpho species. Listen to him explain why he is fascinated by them.
A morpho has a great advantage. It is a butterfly that rarely stays still, unless it is very late, because when it is getting dark, it settles down, but normally it flies constantly. It flies by in the butterfly gardens.
Arsaes butterflies have their own special diet. They feed on bananas and a concoction that he keeps its ingredients secret. Murfos are popular because of their color. They are shimmering blue on one side and brown on the other side. That's perfect for camouflage. Butterflies are really fun to watch, but they serve a critical purpose as well. They help plants reproduce by pollination, thus strengthening the ecosystem.
A few hooks and a shelf have transformed a wall in the Swedish capital, Stockholm, into an outdoor charity. It's called the Wall of Kindness, which is painted with the slogan, "Grab a jacket if you need one, leave a jacket if you can spare one." Here, people can donate their winter clothes or warm boots if they have some extra. The Wall of Kindness is meant to help those in need, including the homeless, to stay warm. The wall was set up by a real estate company, and the organizer says people have responded positively with the high turnover. The move was inspired by a trend that has been seen in Iran over the years. Several other countries across the world, such as India, have also organized similar outdoor charities.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Scientists in Brazil have come up with a creative way to shore up the population of a majestic species of monkeys in danger of extinction. Brazilian conservationists have constructed a bridge to reconnect the two sides of Rio de Janeiro's Atlantic Forest. The road had effectively isolated a group of lion tamarins, but now it offers hope for the endangered monkey. There are only 2,500 golden tamarins left in the wild, all of them in Brazil. It is estimated that these animals have lost more than 95% of their habitat.
Childhood joy and lightness meet with art at the First of Its Kind Museum in Rome, Italy. Here, all kinds of art decorations are made of balloons. The exhibit, dubbed Let's Fly, displays a broad range of interactive artworks. In one installation, visitors are invited to find their inner child by diving into a pool of hundreds of small balloons. In another section, giant inflatable sculptures double as a playground for kids. Some installations move only by riding a bicycle. The museum is a place where artists and spectators coexist for a journey into a world of inflatable art capable of freeing the imagination of all ages.
It's the combination of art with childhood and adolescence that makes this place so magical. So they are art installations, but also games. The blurred line between the two is what makes the museum so unique.
The balloon exhibit incorporates innovative works created by 14 different artists from across Europe. The artifacts were created using hundreds of thousands of biodegradable balloons. The organizers say they want to increase environmental awareness by being eco-friendly, as all the artworks will be reused or recycled. The exhibit will run until March the 5th.
As people around the globe are preparing for the New Year holidays, the Vatican lights up a Christmas tree and nativity scene set up on St. Peter's Square. People gathered around the square waiting for long hours to see the illumination. Even heavy rain did not stop them. That's while the official lighting ceremony was held inside the Paul VI Hall, where Pope Francis presides his weekly audiences. The nativity scene, made of more than 30 pieces, is created by Peruvian artists. The majestic Christmas tree is about 28 meters and comes from Andalo, northern Italy. The locals see the stunning tree as a symbol of hope and peace. The tree will be switched on every night until January the 6th. Chinese students receive a science lesson on their country's space station, and they are lucky enough to receive it firsthand from the astronauts living in the first and core module of the station. The class was held via a live broadcast shown on the state television. The three astronauts gave a lecture that focused on physics. They explained how the weightlessness environment affects the movement of objects. The astronauts also gave a tour of the station they arrived at in October for a six-month stay. It seems that their teachings were quite motivating. The students peppered their instructors with questions, including those about living conditions in space. China launched its space station in April and plans to complete it by the end of the next year. Christmas is just around the corner, and children are waiting for their presents. In Guatemala, Santa Claus has a new mode of transport to give gifts to children with cancer.
Today, as in the past year, we are celebrating Christmas with the cancer patients of the shelter. Santa Claus came in a helicopter to give presents to the children. It is very emotional for the children. The majority of them have never been so close to a helicopter, let alone Santa Claus.
That was an exciting experience for the children. The charity event was organized by an institute that supports cancer patients for remote areas in Guatemala. The institute says the event aimed to help the children go through their therapies with more ease. The Amazon River turtles are in danger of extinction, but environmentalists have come up with an initiative to save their lives, and that's by protecting their eggs. Climate change and human activities against their ecosystem have been putting these creatures at risk. Now, what the biologists and local volunteers do is that they recover the turtle nests from riverbanks during the rainy season to protect them from drowning. Then they take care of the baby turtles until they develop a hard shell and are ready to start their life journey. Batches of tiny turtles release into a river in the Amazon border between Bolivia and Brazil. They are now grown enough to protect themselves against different threats. Environmentalists have been doing this for more than 20 years, saving millions of baby turtles. This time they released 1 million of the little turtles. During the Christmas season, people around the world love to add a dose of joy in the form of Santas. Children especially feel ecstatic to see Santas distributing presents and snacks. But you'll be amazed to see how one Santa this time dives into water to give well-behaved sharks and fishes their goodies. In Malta's National Aquarium, Scuba Claus, helped by an elf, plunges into a huge fish tank with his sack of treats to feed sharks and fishes. Santas ho-ho-ho come out in bubble from through his snorkel over his white beard. The aquarium, located in the northern part of the island, hosts more than 175 different species of various marine animals.
Butterflies are probably the most popular among all insect species on Earth due to their beauty and color. Millions of monarch butterflies have flocked to a Mexican forest, creating a magical sight, drawing tourists, scientists, and locals there. The monarch butterflies flee the cold winters of Canada and northern United States and travel thousands of kilometers to hibernate and reproduce in the temperate woods of central Mexico. Hundreds of trees crowded with butterflies can be seen along Mexico's 13,000-hectare monarch reserve after their long journey. However, experts warn of a drop in the number of the species. Climate change is reported to have had an impact on their butterflies' migration pattern, as well as a reduction in their milkweed breeding habitat in the United States.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
In the limelight.
U.S. officials are sticking their heads into the sand of reality on Omicron. Unless they take needed steps, the results may be catastrophic. Dear listeners, what you heard was part of an article written by Gleb Tapioski, writer. This article is titled Omicron Reveals How U.S. Officials Stick Their Heads into the Sand of Reality. Stay tuned for more. U.S. officials are sticking their heads into the sand of reality on Omicron. Unless they take needed steps, the results may be catastrophic. Omicron is 4.2 times more infectious than Delta, according to a recent study that aligns with other estimates of 3 to 6 times greater infectivity. Still, surveys show that Omicron has had very little impact on the willingness of Americans to get a booster or even get a first vaccine dose. Yet, despite this very serious threat, we see the lack of meaningful leadership action. Scientists strongly believe that a major winter wave of Omicron is coming in the U.S. That's because of other countries where Omicron is spreading. U.S. genomic sequencing is much worse than other countries with similar cultures and climates, such as the U.K. It's detecting a doubling of Omicron cases every couple of days. The U.K. Health Authority called Omicron the most significant threat since the pandemic began. The country already had someone die with Omicron. Or consider Denmark, which has hit its highest case load of pandemic due to Omicron. Norway also has a very high COVID case growth rate for the same reason. The only silver lining is that Omicron so far appears to cause a milder illness than Delta. Yet the World Health Organization has warned about the mildness narrative. It noted that the unvaccinated or those vaccinated who are older or have underlying health conditions and don't have a booster are still at risk for severe disease and death. The much faster disease transmission and vaccine escape undercut the less severe overall nature of Omicron. That's why hospitals have a large probability of being overwhelmed, including in the U.S., as the Center for Disease Control warned. Yet despite this very serious threat, we see the lack of real action in the U.S. The federal government tightened international travel guidelines, which might have helped if Omicron wasn't already detected in over half of all states. It's exploring the possibility of Omicron-specific boosters, which would take at least 3 months to be approved, long after the Omicron wave sweeps over the U.S. But it's not taking the steps that would be the real game changers. We see even more problematic behavior at the state level. For example, Colorado Governor Jared Polis, a Democrat, declared the end of the medical emergency in recent interview, despite the rise of Omicron. Similarly, most companies are not pivoting effectively to meet Omicron. Some are bringing out the tired old delay the office reopening play. For example, Google, Uber, and Ford, along with many others, have delayed their return to the office for several months. Those that already returned are calling for stricter pandemic measures, such as more masks and social distancing, but not changing their work arrangements. You probably heard the quote, "The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results." Despite plenty of warnings from risk management and cognitive bias experts like Dr. Fauci, companies are repeating the same mistakes of failing to re-envision the future of work. That's despite numerous employees quitting because of the compulsive plans of their employers to get them back to the office as part of the Great Resignation. What explains this puzzling leadership behavior in the United States? U.S. officials and all of Americans are prone to falling for dangerous judgment errors called cognitive biases. Rooted in wishful thinking, these mental blind spots lead to poor strategic and financial decisions when evaluating choices. One of the biggest challenges relevant to the Omicron is the cognitive bias known as the ostrich effect, named after the myth that ostriches stick their heads into the sand when they fear danger. The ostrich effect refers to people denying negative reality. Delta illustrated the high likelihood of additional dangerous variants, yet the leadership in the U.S., a trillion-dollar companies, and the federal government denied the reality of this risk. The way forward into the future of work is to defeat cognitive biases and avoid denying reality by rethinking the approach to the future. For companies, instead of dictating a top-down approach to how employees collaborate, adopt a team-led approach where each individual team leader of a rank-and-file employee team determines what works best for the team. Integrate best practices for innovation, collaboration, and accountability for hybrid and remote teams, such as virtual asynchronous brainstorming. For governments, re-envision the kind of red tape involved in approval processes during emergency conditions and the kind of funding available for public health. It should be absolutely unacceptable that thousands of people are dying due to a month-long FDA approval process when the FDA's officials approved stopping Paxlovid's trial early. It should be absolutely unacceptable that people are spreading COVID to others because the government refuses to facilitate easy access to at-home COVID tests. And it should be absolutely unacceptable for high-level government officials to muddle the terrible message that COVID is over as a medical emergency. COVID will never go away. We need to learn to live with it.